There's word today that the Six Nation talks to curb North Korea's nuclear weapons program will be held in Beijing, perhaps in September. The talks will involve China, Russia, Japan, the United States, and both Koreas. Diplomats hope these negotiations will be more fruitful than the bilateral U.S.-North Korea negotiations that Pyongyang had sought. Intensive diplomacy by Beijing helped convince the North to drop that demand. China's traditional alliance with North Korea helped as well. But as Anthony Kuhn reports from Beijing, there is growing friction between the two countries.
China has now been in transition to a market economy for a quarter of a century. Shi Yinhong, an international relations expert at People's University in Beijing, explains that Chinese are dismayed that North Korea has not followed their example and remains belligerent and destitute. Although it's the North Koreans' business, he says, what road they choose to take and the way they rule their country, China's experience is nevertheless something they can learn from. Because of the nuclear issue, North Korea's domestic situation is no longer just its own problem, but has instead become a matter of international concern. The current crisis is one reason that there was no celebration in China last week on the 50th anniversary of the end of the Korean War. In recent years, the declassification of historical documents in Moscow and Beijing has cast new light on China's wartime alliance with North Korea. One of the historians to make use of the documents is Chen Jian, a professor at the University of Virginia in Charlottesville and author of China's Road to the Korean War.
Scholars have been able to provide different kind of interpretations based on new information, providing a picture that is more complicated and comprehensive than the simple interpretation that China entered the war for China's border defense.
In his book, Chen argues that Chairman Mao also chose to enter the war in order to consolidate his rule at home by citing an external threat to China as justification for a crackdown on opponents of the new regime. Many Chinese also feel irked to learn that North Korean leader Kim Il-sung launched his invasion of the South without fully informing Beijing of his plans, and that Stalin sent the Chinese to fight without committing Soviet forces. Shi Yinhong says that for China, the lessons of that conflict are clear. China, he says, should perhaps think about President George Washington's advice in his farewell address to avoid entering into any entangling alliances. One remaining entanglement is that China is still bound by a mutual defense treaty it signed with Pyongyang in the 1960s. Beijing continues to keep the Pyongyang regime afloat, providing almost all of its fuel imports and an estimated one-third to one-half of its food imports. Shi Yinhong warns that if diplomatic talks over North Korea's nuclear program fail, China has got to be ready to impose economic sanctions on its neighbor. If the situation deteriorates to the point where there's no other way, he says, provided that it's done in a planned fashion and with international authorization, it would not be out of the question for China to use economic methods to supplement its diplomatic efforts. To some extent, North Korea already feels sold out by China because Beijing established diplomatic relations with South Korea in 1992. China's ties with the South now tower over those with the North. In 2001, China became South Korea's largest trade partner. South Koreans make up the largest group of foreign students in China. Historically, Korea has always been of key geopolitical importance to China, and whether it's with the North, the South, or a future unified Korea, China is determined to maintain its long-term influence on the peninsula. For NPR News, I'm Anthony Kuhn in Beijing.